All right, how's everybody doing? Welcome to Wednesday here in Chicago. I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and also the Director of Entertainment and Programming at the soon-to-be-opening Epiphany Center for the Arts right there in the West Loop, 201 South Ashland Avenue. So hopefully everybody is having a wonderful afternoon, wonderful day. And there's the theme song. Thanks to Craig Pilo out there in LA for submitting the theme song. Always a pleasure listening to that, and always a pleasure for having you on watching the show. Of course, as I always say, if you like what you're hearing and like what you're experiencing, please like it, please share it, please hit us up, leave us a comment, shoot me a DM. We always love hearing from everybody watching. And for all the past episodes and all the past podcasts, visit chicagomusicrevealed.com, chicagojazzmagazine.com, chicagojazz.com, and every podcast platform you can imagine. That's where you can hear all the past episodes. This is episode 64 of Chicago Music Revealed, and this is a special episode. We're going to have John Minnick on here to bring him on right now. We're going to get started off the bat. He's got a brand new recording that just came out June 5th, if I'm looking at my notes correctly, called Herring Cove. And he's got, well, first of all, he incredible vocalist. The band sounds incredible. And there's a very special guest that not only played on it, but also helped produce it. And I know he's been a friend of yours, John, for many years. Dave Liebman, the great Dave Liebman. Now, we love Dave Liebman here in Chicago because he always comes through town and performs. But you're lucky enough to have him living in New York, so you get to see him a whole heck of a lot more than us. But congratulations on this recording. Listening to, you know, I got to scan through about five or six of the tunes. And the thing that stuck out me the most, before we get into the meanings behind everything, and it's really a deep album, and I love the thought process on a lot of the even from the title down, everything's got a connection and everything means something, and I want to talk about that. But just the recording quality and the way that the band is interacting, but I love it's crisp. It sounds really popping, and that's not something you normally get when you hear a vocal jazz recording these days. So I mean, just the experience of listening to it, it's really well done. So congratulations.
Thank you. It was a great project. I have to say, I work with a friend of mine named Eric Holmberg. He and I have been friends for years and years. And we talk a lot about political issues, gay community issues, music subjects, jazz music. We've talked about gay people in jazz and is there a place for gay people in jazz for many years. And then in the last about 10 years, I've been moving forward as a jazz cabaret singer in New York. I met up with Lydia Liebman, then I met up with Dave Liebman. And anyway, it became our opportunity to what we've been talking about, let's put it into the music kind of thing.
You know, it's interesting you said that. So, I mean, so is your background coming from more cabaret or more jazz, and then you kind of morphed into the jazz from the cabaret?
Interesting question. I started as a classical musician. I was a tuba player. Tubist.
I actually had a jazz tuba player on last week. So there you go.
Yes. Really? I'll get that name after this show. I'll yes. be very interested in that. Maybe I could shift careers. Kidding. I decided to start to sing. I took lessons, you know, while I had a day job. I just wanted to keep the music going. And I did both things sort of in parallel, jazz jams and cabaret open mics, you know, back and forth that way. It evolved. I got a show at a cabaret club in Boston called Encore Lounge, but I did more of a jazz and blues sort of, they gave me Sunday nights. You know, normally okay. It was a piano bar show tune kind of place in the theater district. But I wanted to do a little, my show was cabaret. Also jazz and blues. There's a great blues singer named Ruth Brown.
Okay.
If you know, yeah, Ruth Brown. And I saw her show at Regatta Bar in Boston, in Cambridge, with a friend of mine. And that really set the, I'll go more of the jazz direction, the jazz and blues direction for me. Her show, even though it was a cabaret setting, small room, small stage, it was spectacular. So that's what really kicked me into the jazz direction.
She's actually out of New Orleans, isn't she? I think.
That's a good question. Of course, she passed away about 8 years ago.
Yeah, I think she was teaching out of New Orleans because we had somebody on, and I can't remember which vocalist it was, but he's from New York, and he was inspired by her enough that he actually moved and studied with her in Europe. That's what it was. But it's interesting that that connection happened because he was inspired the same way. He was into cabaret and into different things, and he was inspired by hearing her on a recording, I think it was. So
yeah,
that's interesting.
And from a cabaret standpoint, I don't know if you know, she won a Tony Award for a Broadway musical review called Black and Blue.
Oh, okay.
And that sort of kicked her. You know, it was her and Linda Hopkins were both the star of the show. And that sort of kicked her into, you know, the theater-related cabaret world, I assume. You know, after Broadway, there's some small rooms that want to hire the Broadway Tony Award.
Right.
And she was presented to a lot of cabaret people that way. And I was one of them. I was lucky enough to see her. She was great.
So listening to the recording, I've heard a lot of cabaret. Now, there's some wonderful cabaret singers. There's also the Chicago Cabaret Professionals, who I've interviewed many times and really good friends with Ann Burnell and Denise Tomasello and everybody here in Chicago. But listening to you sing, you're singing. I mean, you're swinging. Because a lot of times cabaret singing is a little bit different than jazz singing. It's like more show, you know, show like a Broadway kind of things. But I mean, you fit right in with this rhythm section and with the energy, you know, just the feel and the swing. Was this something that just came natural to you, just to meld between the two? It didn't really matter.
Thanks. And yes, it came naturally to me. I'm sorry to say it just did. I was in a band of guys who all had day jobs like me called Feed the Meter in Boston. Just guys got, it was like the weekly poker game.
Okay.
And I started to kind of groove with the musicians kind of thing. We were all amateurs, but I noticed, hey, I can do a natural rhythm thing with my voice. So that kind of came naturally.
Well, I mean, it really, I didn't even realize your background was maybe out of cabaret. So, I mean, that's really interesting, number one. But number two, now you've gone on and reading over your website and looking at the bio and all that. I mean, you've been nominated for Jazz Male Vocalist of the Year, Hot House Magazine in New York, I believe I'm remembering. And I mean, all these different things. So, I mean, did you even imagine when you were doing your day gig and playing some of these jazz things and playing some cabaret things that it would get to this level now where you're putting out recordings and you're nationally known?
Absolutely no. No, no, sir. No, I did not. So I'm as surprised as anybody. But yeah, it's thrilling.
So let's talk a little bit about the new recording, Herring Cove. Now, how did the whole thing come about? Because talk a little bit about Herring Cove, about the meaning behind the title, but then also talk a little bit about how you decided to put this out and how some of these tunes have deep meaning behind them.
After the prior album, Right Around the Corner, which was a great experience, and Dave Liebman sat in on a couple of tunes, my friend Eric Holmberg started emailing me, hey, I have an idea for this song, that song. And the first few were okay, you know, interesting. But then he had this idea for a song called Herring Cove. And that just made the whole thing come together. He had a partner named Bruce Beckles, who passed away from complications of AIDS in the late 90s. And when they were together, they went to Provincetown in Massachusetts at the end of Cape Cod every summer. And their favorite place was Herring Cove. The cover painting, Eric actually owns that painting. That's a painting he bought with Bruce.
Okay.
So it's a very honest, real, this really happened. This is real people. This is the real painting. This is the real, it's real. It really happened.
Well, so talk a little bit about the manifestation of some of these tunes then, because he's your writing partner. Is that how that works? I mean, and him are collaborating on that. So talk a little bit, because there's a lot of meaning behind it. I mean, I mentioned before we came on Unconditional. There's a meaning behind that. There's a lot of LGBTQ, meaning behind a lot of these songs. So talk a little bit about that.
A lot of these are subjects we normally talked about, generally maybe bar conversation. And when we kicked off the album and, I guess Herring Cove really said, hey, this is really an idea that we can build, I guess is the way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Then he started emailing other ideas, or I'd have a suggestion of stuff we had talked about. Would it make a good song? Some things were two different songs and we put them together. You know, there's a give and take to this process. One of them, Tell Him I'm Fine, is an observation of a friend of ours I'm not saying who. And let's see. So we had other ideas. I had a folder for each idea. We had some that just didn't build yet. But the group of six or so on the album are the ones that that built out and really were album worthy.
Well, and then you also play some. Well, there's a couple stand like Green Dolphin Street's on there,
right.
And I think Dave Liebman, if I read it correctly, he helped arrange that and put that together.
He did arrange it. Yes.
It's a wonderful arrangement, and you know, I love. First of all, I love the tune, but second of all, again, it goes back to the crispness and about how the entire album pops, the way it's mixed, the way it's mastered, the way it's recorded. Right. It's really well done as far as that goes. And then, which shocked me, you did a Cher tune. I don't know if it's Cher, but that's the one. That's the reason why I know it. If you can turn back time, and I wish Cher would have done it the way you did it, because it sounds way better to me.
Don't say that. She'll hate me. Don't say that. I want her to love me.
She might steal this version from you. So talk a little bit about the thought process of putting something like that on, and then you had to sit and rearrange this thing a million times, because it certainly, you can tell what it is once you get into the chorus, really. But I mean, I'm interested in the tune now. I actually would listen to that tune a lot more than, you know, Cher.
Well, the composer is Diane Warren, and she's a great composer. She's written a million people. She's one of the hitmaker composers, they sometimes call people. You can guarantee her song is going to be Diane Warren, the composer. We wanted to do a song that is pretty recognizable in the gay community, and wider than that, certainly. But, you know, it's common to hear that song in clubs and bars.
Mm-hmm.
And really... We just sort of, it actually wasn't that difficult to come up with this new arrangement. I just started to sing it this way. Enrique Anene, the pianist and arranger, started to play it that way. And then we just went for it. We went through the verse. And then there's a verse and a sort of a bridge, or A, B sections. Mm-hmm. The A section went great. We're like, okay, now let's try the B section. But if it doesn't fit, you know, the whole thing is toast. So, but we kept going, and we were able to keep that overall personality of the song, our, you know, the sort of a depressing version of the song. And it worked with all the lyrics. I was able to deliver all the lyrics with that theme in mind. It just worked great.
Yeah. Well, no, it works wonderfully, actually. I mean, I listened to it a couple of times. I was like, man, this is really cool. And there's a lot of textures to a lot of these songs. You know, talk a little bit about Unconditional, and talk about the meaning behind that. Also, the fact that there's donating the proceeds from that specific tune to the LGBTQ community center, right?
Right. There's a center in Manhattan called the Ali Forney Center. Most people know it when the actress Bea Arthur passed away. She donated a significant amount of money to that center, and it was a few hundred thousand dollars. Pretty big news.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are aware of the place because of what Bea Arthur had done. But they are the largest homeless center for LGBTQ youth in the country. I believe their work goes outside of New York, but they're headquartered in New York and centered there. They are for LGBTQ kids that are homeless or left their home. And almost 50% of homeless teens in New York are LGBTQ,
wow,
which is a very high percent of kids who are either kicked out of their home or feel so uncomfortable about their home or so uncomfortable where they're from, they have to just roll the dice and go to New York. So it's a very serious issue. And in today's world, with everything going on, I think we all know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's even worse. They have to be kept safe. They have to kept away from violence. It's very difficult on this group. It's a great, great organization. They really need people's help. You can visit their website, Ali Forney Center. But we knew we were going to do a song about a kid who's kicked out. It's an important issue. We just knew we would do it. Interestingly, my friend Eric wrote the entire song in one day.
Wow.
Just the way it is. I mean, not the melody and the chords, but he wrote all the lyrics in one day. And so he was that impassioned by the idea.
Yeah.
What happened then was I went to Enrique, and we came up with sort of a chord scheme and melodic scheme. But Enrique had a great idea. He said, deliver it like you're acting it, and then we'll build the arrangement around that. Because parts are important to me, and, you know, of course, I understood all about it. It's very heartfelt and very close to me. So he said, I'll just lightly touch stuff, and you act, and then we'll build the song from that. So that's what we did.
I actually, it's interesting you said that, because that's what I got out of it when I was listening to it. And it sounded like you were acting it out. It didn't sound like a vocalist. You know what I mean? I mean, you could hear the passion. You could be, you're hearing the like you're acting it out. It was really interesting.
And that cabaret background kind of helped.
Yeah, that's true. A jazz vocalist wouldn't be able to act it out the way you acted it out, but it worked with what was happening on the whole front of it. So the entire recording, Herring Cove, is available at johnminnick.com, and I've got the link down below there. You know, I'm curious to let's circle back a little bit at the beginning, because you said, you know, when you were talking about this recording and talking about stuff, not a lot. I don't know if there's not a lot. See, I never think about it this way. You know, as we talked before we came on, I'm a jazz drummer and went to North Texas, blah, blah, blah. I played all over the place. So I never think about it. I play with everybody and anybody. It doesn't ever matter to me. But I mean, do you find that there's a little bit of a maybe not now, but maybe when you were first starting out, that in jazz, you know, maybe a gay vocalist or, you know, somebody like that wasn't accepted by in some way in jazz necessarily?
Yes, I did feel that.
Did you?
I'm thrilled to be able to do this. It's very exciting to have Dave Liebman help, you know, get this, you know, information across the scheme of what we do across. It's 2020. There's not many openly gay jazz vocalists in the past.
Right.
If all the jazz jams or jazz shows I went to, I didn't really see much representation of the gay community. So I guess I felt as though there was a little bit of a wall up, or a little bit of, yeah, no one else is doing it, so you won't either. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting when you say that, because when you think about other genres, even blues, right? I mean, there's not a lot of gay blues vocalists now that you're saying it. I mean, I never thought about it that way, but this kind of like makes you think a little bit, about it.
Because blues subject wise can be very transferable. A lot of blues is unfaithful. Oh, my man's out, you know, skipping around. I'm like, I'm not saying it's common in the gay community, but these are topics, you know, the jealousy, the bitterness, the revenge songs. I do one called, I do it in my show sometimes, called Never Make Your Move Too Soon. And it was written for B.B. King, and it has to do with a sort of betrayal. And I, you know, in the gay community, we have that too. So, and we talk about, and that's known to be in the gay community. So those blues topics seem to naturally, when you adjust the pronouns a little bit, work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I never even thought about it, but I mean, this is making me really kind of think about that. It's interesting when you start thinking that way. You're right. There's not a lot of gay jazz or blues vocalists back in the day. I mean, really, it's you know, pop music a little bit more prevalent, but it's yep. interesting to think about yep. it that way. So let's talk a little bit about how you got into, you know, singing. I mean, who were some of your influences? Because I hear a lot of different influences in there. Maybe a little bit of well, I don't know. I mean, a little Ella Fitzgerald, even with some of the swinging and some of the feel and stuff in between when you're, you know, in the groove of everything and the phrasing and stuff. But I mean, who are some of your favorites?
Jazz vocalist. I think my favorite is Carmen McRae.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say that about Sarah and Ella, but Carmen McRae is my favorite. but I love Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald. I never saw Ella Fitzgerald live, but I did see Sarah Vaughan live at Symphony Hall. She was spectacular. And she did a stunning version of Send in the Clowns, which is a cabaret show tune.
Yep.
Stunning. So that was another, you know, validator that, yeah, you can take, you know, jazz and cabaret and show and put it together. I like Mel Torme.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great band leader. I've seen his live show, you know, before he passed away. Very, a lot of personality on stage, you know, very, he can be funny. He can be dramatic. He was an all around kind of musician and showman. In terms of, there's another singer like George Benson.
Oh yeah.
Lou Rawls.
Oh yeah. Some of the greats.
I had all those George Benson and, Basie's Band albums. There's a couple of those from the 80s. Just great stuff.
Yeah. I mean, when you're developing your vocal style, Are you like sitting in your you know, digesting this stuff, you know, because you get some vocalists that sit and they'll actually transcribe, they'll listen to the phrasing, they'll transcribe it, they'll work through it, or is this something that just osmosis wise you're listening to it, you're it's sinking into you and then it's coming out of you as John rather than trying to regurgitate stuff?
It's a little bit of the reverse. I listen to those that kind of music, but when I start to do a show or an album, I don't listen to that kind of music at all, because I don't want to accidentally copy one of them.
That's true.
So I work everything out on my own. And then after I do the album done, I can go back to listening to George Benson.
So, all right. So let's talk a little bit about the process, because I want to talk about what Dave Liebman brought to the table, because I've talked to a lot of different vocalists and a lot of different instrumentalists. And it's one thing, especially in your case, too. I mean, you're close to some of these tunes. You're acting out Unconditional. We talked about that. We're talking about the different arrangements for Turn Back Time and things like that. Sometimes I've heard, and talking to different musicians, it's hard for them to go into the studio now because they're so close to the material and actually be able to separate themselves and then also put an album together and have it come out to be the quality and be where they want it to be. Like 6 months after it's done, everybody looks back and goes, oh, geez, I should have done this, that. But it helps to have a producer and somebody with such experience and like a legend like Dave Liebman. I mean, how important was it to have Dave sign on to this project, be an executive producer, and help you as almost like a second set of ears on a lot of this stuff?
It was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. So there's that.
Well, okay, that's it.
It was terrific. He's a great guy. He's an educator. He's, of course, an unbelievable musician. And what he offered to do was get involved at the grittiest beginning part, is talk through all the songs, explain them to me, explain your lyrics. He read all the lyrics, looked at the melodies, changed some chords. He wanted to understand the subject matter behind everything. And I told him a few extra things just for fun. So about the gay community. So he was so involved with the project, you know, that it was just, and in agreement with it and supporting it, it was just great. I don't want to seem like I'm fawning, but I'm fawning.
No, but I mean, you know, it's interesting you said that he got involved right at the beginning, because that's really important to understand where every tune came from, understand the lyric, and understand the meaning behind stuff, because a lot of people will come in, they'll be at the studio, they'll play on it, and they'll give you their two cents and kind of help you work through some arrangements. But I mean, Dave seemed like he was hands-on on the whole thing. And I think in a project like this, that's very important, obviously.
Yes, he was very invested in the project. It was really, really great. We used the band I normally use, Enrique Anene piano, Carlos Mena bass, Pablo Luchon's drums, and we've been working together for about 5 years. So we all knew each other. You know, we can look at each other and we know what we're about to say. So Dave knew us also. He was really, you know, he knew what we could all do. He asked us to do more stuff, sometimes out of our comfort zone, whatever. Mm-hmm. And one thing about Dave Liebman is, he's done, I think, 10 million recordings, and he has played with every single jazz person on earth. Okay, a bit of an exaggeration, but he has done over 500 recordings and played with the most other NEA jazz masters. And he just literally knows what to do in every situation.
Right, right.
And you can see it come to life. On the one song, A Melody, I was kind of out of my comfort zone. It's kind of a romantic, oldish and newish time, but I don't know what to say. You know, I had some ideas about Laura, that song, mm-hmm. but with a little contemporary twist, some different things in it. Anyway, I'm listening to the headphones in the booth as Dave's saying, okay, with the piano player, what, play those chords? Okay, you know what? He goes, oh, okay. And then he starts to play something. I'm like, oh my God, he got it. You know, I could tell, I remember the moment when, oh, he gets where I'm going with this. So that was very thrilling.
Well, it's an outstanding recording, Herring Cove, John Minnick. And before I let you go, I mean, you put it out June 5th and, yep. You know, probably planning on doing some club dates and some live performances to support. And obviously none of that's happening right now.
And this is it. This is all there is.
This is it. You got stuck with me. I'm sorry.
But let's sing a few numbers. Where you just did a web show last week.
Okay.
It was a trial kind of thing. First web show, just me and a piano player. Enrique wasn't available. So I used this great piano guy named Matisse Picard. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was weird because there's no audience reaction at all. You know, I'm in we're in a studio, me, piano, and a little box with a light on. And I'm thinking to myself, they could be rolling their eyes, laughing their heads off. I would have no idea. So, but the one thing I learned to do is do the show, you know, when, and I've sort of learned the process. You have the feeling of, I don't know if this is selling or not. After the show, I called everybody.
Okay.
So, so now I can look back at, okay, it worked. A couple of things we have to polish, but now we're going to move forward and do more web shows.
So everybody can get the info at your website at johnminnick.com, I would assume.
Yes.
And so you're pretty much just hunkered down doing some live web shows until all of this breaks loose. How's the response been to the recording? Because I know Lydia's probably pushing it pretty good and everybody's starting to get a listen to it. And I had mentioned to her when I had her on the show maybe 2 months ago, we were talking, and I was a big fan of people releasing stuff now because they have somewhat of a captive audience if people can hear and listen to it. So what's been the response been to it?
In a way, I think it helps give people something else. As Lydia said, it's kind of a feel-good album because it has a positive message and that stuff. So let's release it. We've gotten a few reviews so far that have been very, very good. I don't know if you read the review, a couple of the reviews.
Yep.
Really strong. I don't even know how one of the critics figured all this stuff out about me. I'm like, that's it. Did I talk to him before this? Very odd. But so far, so good. A lot of listens, you know, for people who don't want to, you know, they go on Spotify and go the inexpensive route.
Right.
A high number of the first weekend, I think it was 3,000. It was very high.
Wow.
So I don't know what, you know, I'm not a numbers person. Yes, I am. I'm not interested in a big response. Yes, I am. things are a little delayed. You know, time has slowed down a bit across the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So we will keep pushing. I did a little promotional tour last week before the web show. I went to some key people, Deb Lipman, who does the duet with me. She's spectacular on the album. And I, handed the album to her and got a photo up. We're wearing masks, you know, all that, you know, super safe album distribution. You know, I'm going to pound pavement with a mask on if I have to.
Well, you got to do what you got to do in these days, in these times, man, you know. Well, hey, John, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Congratulations on the new recording, Herring Cove. And hopefully when things shake out a little bit, I always say this to our guests, but hopefully everybody will be able to see you live and in person. But everybody should check your website so they can see the live streams. And I'm going to link up with Lydia. So the next time there is one, we'll share it out on Chicago Jazz Magazine and all over all our platforms as well.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. It was great.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, John. Take care. Have a good weekend.
You too.
All right. That was... we started a little late. Completely my fault, not John's fault. I had a few things flipped around a little bit, so not a big problem, but it was a pleasure having John on, and what a great guy. I mean, what a great recording as well. Congratulations to him. I thank Lydia so much for hooking us up. And, I took a quick listen as we were getting ready for the show yesterday and again today. And you will not be disappointed if you check this out. So johnminnick.com. We've got everything linked up below that we're going to have also on YouTube, also on all of our podcast stuff and everything else. So I appreciate that. And now talking about new recordings, John Minnick, Herring Cove to Thaddeus Tukes. And we're going to be talking about Thaddeus's recording and previewing a couple of tracks tomorrow at 6 p.m. here. I just talked to Thaddeus this afternoon, too, for a few minutes. He's going to pop on. We're going to play a couple of tunes, drive people over, have a good time. And hopefully on Friday, everybody goes and purchases Thaddeus. So everybody go pick up John's today, Thaddeus on Friday, and then we'll be into the 4th of July weekend. So everybody, I thank everyone for watching. As usual, I thank everyone for listening on the podcast. If you like what you're hearing, please share it. Please like it. Please give us some love. Leave us a comment. As I always say, tell your neighbors, tell your family, call the grandkids tomorrow, 6 p.m. right here, the last show of the week, because we're taking Friday off for the 4th of July. So everybody stay safe, stay healthy. And until tomorrow, I will see you back here at 6 p.m. Thanks again.